Greetings, and welcome to the Profound Medical Corporation fourth quarter and full year 2017 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Stephen Kilmer, Investor Relations.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start by pointing out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but is not limited to, expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer, uterine fibroids, and palliative pain. Often, but not always, forward-looking statements can be identified by use of the words such as plans, is expected, expects, scheduled, intends, contemplates, anticipates, believes, proposes, or variations, including negative variations of such words and phrases, or state that certain actions, events, or results may, could, would, might, or will be taken, occur, or be achieved. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the pharmaceutical industry, economic factors, the equity markets generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual actions, events, or results to differ materially from those described in these forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. With that said, I'll turn the call over to Arun Menawat, Profound's Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome everyone to Profound's Q4 and year-end 2017 conference call. As many of you know, our VP of Finance, Rashed Dewan, is on a medical leave of absence. Until he's able to return, Matthew Sobchak, who has been with the company for about a year, will be filling in for him as Profound's interim VP of Finance. I will now turn it over to Matthew, and I'll come back after his prepared statements to go over the commercial activities.
Thank you, Arun. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company. For those of you who are the shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I would like to provide a brief update on our 2017 fourth quarter and full year financial results. For the 2017 fourth quarter, the company recorded revenue of $1.9 million, with $1.7 million from sales of products and $0.2 million from installation and training services. This was in line with our preliminary Q4 revenue we announced ahead of the J.P. Morgan conference in January, compared to nil in the fourth quarter of 2016 and reflected a 29% increase sequentially over $1.5 million recorded in the previous quarter. The company recorded a net loss for the 3 months ended December 31st, 2007, of $4.5 million, or $0.06 per common share, compared with a net loss of $4.8 million, or $0.10 per common share, for the fourth quarter of 2016. The decrease in net loss was primarily attributed to a decrease in R&D expense of $0.2 million, G&A expenses of $0.1 million, and an increase in gross profits of $0.8 million. These were partially offset by selling and distribution expenses of $0.6 million and financing costs of $0.2 million. For the year ended December 31st, 2007, the company recorded revenue of $4.9 million, $4.7 million from the sale of products, and $0.2 million from installation and training services. The full year 2017 revenues compared to nil in the 12 months ended December 31st, 2016. The company recorded in 2017 net losses of $18.8 million, or $0.31 per common share, compared with a net loss of $16.3 million, or 39 cents per common share for the year ended December 31st, 2016. The increase in net loss in 2017 over 2016 was primarily attributed to an increase in selling and distribution expenses of $2.6 million, G&A expenses of $1.6 million, and an increase in financing costs of $0.4 million. These increases were partially offset by gross profit of $1.9 million. As at December 31st, 2007, the company had cash of $11.1 million. Last week, we completed a bought deal financing in which we raised gross proceeds of $34.5 million. With the net proceeds of approximately $32.3 million from the transaction, after deducting underwriters' discounts and commissions and estimated offering expenses, we believe we have sufficient cash on hand to fund operations and begin commercialization activities in advance of the potential launch of Tulsa Pro in the United States in mid-2019. As at March 23, 2018, Profound had an unlimited number of authorized common shares with 107,667,377 common shares issued and outstanding. With that, I'll now turn the call back to Arun.
Thank you for the financial update, Matthew, and also thank you for so ably filling in while Rashed is on medical leave. We certainly hope he will have full recovery and speedy recovery. In the meantime, it's encouraging to know that we have the built-in management bench strength to be able to handle situations like these. 2017 was a transformative year for Profound, with a number of important clinical, commercial, and corporate milestones achieved. The growing success of our pilot commercial launch of Tulsa Pro in Europe, combined with the acquisition of Philips Sonalleve business, enabled us to make the leap from a development stage medical device company to a platform company focused on growth. Moving forward, we're in a strong position to continue to grow our growth trajectory in 2018 and beyond. Importantly, we are the bought deal financing that closed last Tuesday. We now have the financial resources required to help advance development of Tulsa Pro towards successful commercialization in the United States, further drive clinical adoption of Tulsa Pro in Europe, and execute our commercial plans for our overall platform, including the Sonalleve business. I would like to focus our opening remarks today on those three fronts. Let's start with the TACT trial. For any new participants on our call, TACT is a prospective, open-label, single-arm, pivotal clinical study of 110 patients that is designed to further evaluate the safety and efficacy of Tulsa Pro to ablate prostate tissue in patients with localized organ-confined prostate cancer. The primary efficacy endpoint of TACT is the proportion of patients achieving a post-treatment PSA reduction of greater than 75% of their pre-treatment baseline value. Our pre-established performance goal for success proportion is 50% of patients. At the end of January, we were pleased to announce completion of patient enrollment in the trial. At that time, we also announced that based on preliminary analysis performed by the company of the first 63 evaluation patients, the median PSA reduction was 93%. In addition, 92% or 58 out of 63 patients had achieved the reduction, PSA reduction success proportion. I would like to provide a little more color to the recruitment of the trial. Recruitment gained traction in the second half of last year. In fact, almost 50% of the patients were treated in the last 4 months of the trial, and we are being told by our clinical advisory team that our recruitment was among the fastest of any recent clinical trial in urology. So much so that we ended the trial at 115 patients because of the momentum during the final days and requests from investigators to allow them to finish all of the scheduled patients. Since the five additional patients were within the acceptable range of the protocol, we agreed to it. Two-thirds of all patients treated were in North America, and the remaining one-third in Europe. Approximately two-thirds of the patients in the trial are intermediate-risk patients who would have normally undergone either prostatectomy or radiation treatment. It would be interesting to compare propensity-matched outcomes of our study with those standard treatments. I'm also pleased to announce that additional interim results of the study will be presented by Dr. Klotz in a plenary session at the upcoming meeting of the American Urological Association meeting that will take place in San Francisco from May 18th to the 21st. The presentation is scheduled at 8:20 a.m. on May 21st. If any of you are attending the conference, I encourage you to attend the session. Because it will not be webcast, we will issue a press release as soon as possible after the completion of the presentation. The primary safety endpoint of TACT is the frequency and severity of adverse events, with additional secondary endpoints focused on quality of life side effects commonly associated with current prostate cancer therapies like erectile dysfunction and urinary incontinence. As the standard evaluation periods for these side effects is 12 months post-treatment, the sample size of evaluation to evaluate patients is not yet large enough to be assessed. Planning our next steps are reasonably predictable at this point. We anticipate that all of the 12-month data will become available by mid-Q1 2019, at which point we will complete the file and submit it to the FDA for 510K clearance. If all goes well and we gain approval, we expect to be in the market in the United States in the second half of 2019. We started to evolve into a growth company with the initial commercialization of Telstra Pro in Europe. I'm delighted that revenues showed another strong increase, as Matthew highlighted, over the previous quarter. There have now been four consecutive quarters of sequential sales growth since the Europe pilot launch of Telstra Pro commenced. While we would like to see that strong quarter-over-quarter revenue performance continue unablated, it is difficult to predict at such an early stage of commercialization. Since the majority of our sales at the moment are capital-related and the sales cycles can vary, I think it is fair to assume that we may not always produce revenue growth on a sequential basis. As the company progresses and we do build a larger sales force, increase our install base, and our revenues switch to a higher proportion of recurring revenue, we will start to have a higher degree of predictability. In the meantime, I can tell you that on a year-over-year basis, you can expect us to produce growth in 2018 and beyond. Finally, let's talk about our platform. We became a platform company when we acquired the Philips Sonalee business in Q3 last year, delivering on the promise of real-time MR guidance and ultrasound linked together by intelligent software and robotics to deliver incision-free ablative procedures. We believe that a leadership position makes sense in this market, and as these procedures gain more acceptance in the clinical community. Sonalee is an excellent technology which has been the subject of over 200 peer-reviewed publications in applications ranging from destroying painful uterine fibroids while preserving the fertility potential of the woman to palliative pain treatment of bone metastasis. We have completed a meta-analysis of the 200 publications and have developed a strategy to bring this technology to the United States. We are reviewing this with the FDA at this point and hope to be able to announce details by the end of the second quarter. Our submission for Chinese FDA approval is also moving forward, and we similarly anticipate news from them in the second quarter. In the meantime, since the product is CE marked, we do continue to anticipate revenues from Sonaleve from those geographies that are accepted as a regulatory purposes. Going forward, we can expect a few areas where we anticipate further investment and strengthening of our company. First, we're soliciting feedback from our TAC trial investigators and key opinion leaders on how to further strengthen the clinical message of TULSA based upon the TAC trial. Beyond the TAC trial. Based upon this, we anticipate conducting additional small clinical trials, particularly in the areas of salvage therapies and BPH to support industry-specific guidelines and reimbursement. Speaking of BPH, this application is also turning out to be very interesting for TULSA. As you may know, BPH is a non-cancerous enlargement of the prostate gland due to an overgrowth of prostate cells. It is a common condition that can occur in up to 50% of men between the age of 51 to 60 and up to 90% of men older than 80, often impeding the flow of urine and creating significant urinary symptoms. This is a very large market opportunity and growing worldwide as the world population ages. Traditional modes of surgical treatment of BPH can potentially lead to various complications and may require longer recovery times. Although a number of new treatment options have become available, they tend to work best on small to medium-sized prostates. In the early TULSA Pro treatments of BPH that being conducted in Germany, clinicians have reported being able to treat prostates as large as 122 cc's in one-time procedures that are less than 2 hours from beginning to the end. We plan to conduct additional clinical trials in this area, but are encouraged with the results that we see so far, and specifically like the potential positioning of TULSA for treatment in prostate that might be considered too large for today's solutions. Again, while it's still early, the BPH solution also points to the unique flexibility of TULSA Pro, enabling an interventionalist to ablate all or just a precise portion of an anatomical target, in this case, the prostate. So I think clinicians will find this flexibility of TULSA to be useful as they can customize the needs of their patients. To summarize today's discussion, the U.S. pivotal TAC trial is proceeding well. We are continuing to see good early commercial traction of our prostate product in Europe, and prostate transformation, Profound's transformation into a platform company in 2017 is already producing good benefits. This ends our prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have, and I'll turn this over to our operator.
At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Jason Mills, Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Arun. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Good afternoon, Jason.
Good afternoon. Congratulations on all the progress, and thanks for the updates on the call here. Just a few follow-ups, Arun. I'm wondering if you could give us your expectation for TULSA or TACT presentation and timing sort of this time next year? In what form do you expect that? And then as it relates to the clinical data, I know this is hard to tell, but as you talk to clinicians, what do you think their level of expectation is with respect to both adverse events, so ED and incontinence, as well as what they're hoping to see from a biopsy rate standpoint? Maybe you could just give us a flavor for the feedback you're getting from folks that would be in position to use this this product once approved.
Sure, Jason, I'm happy to. So, well, let me start with your second set of questions first. We have been talking with our investigators quite a bit, and the general feedback from them is that their patients' downtime after the procedure is quite low. And I think I can also tell you we've received quite a few letters from the patients who have actually undergone this procedure, and these are quite positive letters and pictures where they are, you know, skiing within a week of getting their catheter removed or being intimate very, very quickly after the procedure is done. Some of these things are clearly anecdotal, but the general feedback is that the low point after the surgery, most people find it to be very, very easy to tolerate the procedure, maybe 1 or 2 days of general oral anesthesia, aspirin or ibuprofen, but nothing substantial. With respect to the expectations, when we look at the literature, the biopsy data is ranging anywhere from 10% to 23% after prostatectomy procedures. And for radiation, it actually ranges to even higher than that. So I think that we are learning that biopsy is not as black and white a data set as we would like to see, but I think somewhere in that range is probably what the expectation is. Some of them are expecting it to be lower. Some of them are expecting that given that there are other benefits, a little higher would actually still be fine. So that's kind of the range, though, Jason. With respect to erectile dysfunction, I think the clinical data from respectable publications are typically in the range of 40% or higher, which is in a way surprising because when you talk to urologists, they would sort of tell you that in their case, it tends to be a little lower than that. But I think that if we can get significantly lower than that, it will be a value driver for sure in our case. The urinary incontinence and the rectal incontinence, the other two variables, and those tend to be in the 10 to 20% range typically. And I think that we certainly, because of the fact that we do cooling of both the urethra and the rectum during the procedure, we certainly think we should be able to do better than that there as well. So I think in general, those are sort of the range where we're seeing. To answer your first question, I think that certainly the interim results, we will focus on the primary endpoint to the best we can tell. We think that sometime by end of January or mid-February at the latest next year, we will, put the full data set out. We haven't quite figured out the venue at the moment, but that's kind of the plan at the moment.
Okay, that's very helpful, Arun. Thank you. You know, what struck me, I guess I just didn't have an appreciation for this until you mentioned it on the call, is that a good chunk, and I thought you said two-thirds of the patients in the TAC trial were intermediate, so they would typically go for a procedure, a more invasive procedure, the likes of which you mentioned, radical prostatectomy,
yes,
or radiation. Whereas these data may, if they, the results come out where you hope, would seemingly position you as a competitor in that more later stage, intermediate stage realm. But the other piece of this that's really interesting, I think, to a lot of investors is the Gleason 6, Gleason 7 patients that are more watchful waiting patients, watchful waiting sort of forced on them as opposed to them wanting to sit around with cancer in their bodies. So maybe speak to if you see the clinical results come in, biopsy rates in that 10 to 20% range, adverse event rates that are as good or better than what you mentioned from other modalities, how do you see the adoption of TULSA-PRO taking shape initially and over, let's say, the first couple of years? Will it be more, do you think, in the watchful waiting, or do you think that you'll work your way from intermediate risk down the risk curve to lower risk patients? I'd just be interested in your thoughts there.
Sure. Jason, the way I look at it is that, you know, I'm going to generalize a little bit or round up some of these numbers. But the way, you know, if we look at the publications in terms of which treatments are common, what we find is that about 30% of the patients are basically told active surveillance, so wait and watch, and every year there's a biopsy or some other procedure to check up if they're progressing. About 30% undergo prostatectomy, and about 30% undergo radiation. And then there is a 10% group that goes through some specialized procedures that might be a targeted therapy of some sort and so on. And so the biggest unmet need that I see is that you have these two ends of the spectrum right now. You have one end, which is the active surveillance group that means do nothing. And then this other end of the spectrum, which is, you know, do everything, remove the whole prostate or do this severe treatment, which is radiation. And so that intermediate patient group, I kind of feel like that is the group that has really no good answer today because they cannot sit and wait. And going through prostatectomy and radiation is too much for them. But they do need something. So our plan is to start with that intermediate patient and to say to them, you know, if you compare yourself, if you have a choice of radical prostatectomy or radiation, this is a better option to start. And the good news about this is that it does not prevent them from doing any other procedure in the future. So this is likely to be a safe place to start. It gives a solution that really is a good fit for them. It allows a urologist to have a very comfortable place to treat the patient, knowing that they can always do more severe therapies on them later. And I think even though we expect to continue to produce good data, it still gives a urologist a comfortable place to start. So that's where I kind of hope to start. But as the procedure gets better and better, and as you know, device technologies like ours, particularly that are driven by software, will continue to get better over time, I do expect that we will be able to get garner patients from all of these different types of treatments.
Thank you, Arun. One last question. I'll get back in queue. And actually, you segued into it nicely, which is you mentioned the improvements you're making to the technology, specifically on the software side. I know that you expect your company to continue to develop this technology and to make it better. Maybe you could give us a sense for what clinicians' feedback is in terms of what they would like to see improvements, where they would like to see improvements, and maybe give us a product pipeline update to the extent that you're willing with respect to some of these newer iterational improvements or upgrades that you plan to make over the next year or 2 years that you think will make a difference in terms of outcomes for patients. Thanks, everyone, for taking all the questions.
Sure. Thank you. So the most interesting feedback that we're getting is reduction in the time of surgery. And what is unique is that in our procedure, the surgeon, in fact, is sitting down at a console, and our therapy, our software kind of functions as a, I kind of call it like a co-pilot in the sense that they are the captain of this, and they are designing the treatment. So they can draw the boundaries of what zone needs to be ablated. Once the zone has been defined by the surgeon, then the surgeon basically presses a button on the computer, and the computer software then designs this, it goes about and does the ablation pretty much on an automatic basis. And if there is something that changes or goes wrong, there are, you know, error messages or information that comes on the screen that they can watch and so on. So one of the things they're certainly looking for is how do we continue to make it easier to define the zone of surgery and so on. So in that regard, I can share a couple of things. First one is that we have already been making good progress, and I can tell you that we've now done 3 procedures in one day. So very comfortable. Starting at 9 o'clock, we have done our first patient, and before lunchtime, we've actually done 2 patients, and then taking good regular lunch hour, starting in the late afternoon, we've done our third patient, so we've been able to finish by 9. So very comfortably, we think we'll be able to provide 3 patients a day, even with the current status. We are in the process of releasing our next software, which would be out within the next 90 days or maybe 60 days, which will be the first generation of a little bit of improved user interface, which would, if the surgeon, for example, needs to make any changes in their treatment plan, they will be able to do it on the fly instead of having to stop the computer. They'll actually be able to do it on the fly, which should save them some time as well. So that will be another step forward. So part of our goal as we go forward is to continue to make it a much more friendly user interface and faster procedure. That's what we'll invest in.
Thank you, Arun. I'll get back in queue.
Our next question comes from Prakash Gaud, CIBC. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon, everybody. I have a few questions on TULSA-PRO. First one, Arun, you talked about the BPH indication and possibly starting a trial. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you see as the potential size of that trial, and would that be a registration trial for the U.S.?
Prakash, I would really like to wait until we can announce the exact trial. We have the protocols are close to done. We are reviewing them with a number of our investigators. I would actually like to wait.
Sure.
What I can share with you is that we think that there is a segment of this market which we would define as prostates that are larger than 70 cc's, that we believe that segment is underserved at the moment. And so our trial will be focusing on that segment in particular. And I certainly can also share with you that the results, we don't need to wait 12-month biopsies. So these trials are likely to be not only faster in recruiting because the size of the market is so big, the patient population is much more available. But, you know, the results are really primarily looking at the change in the urination rate of the patient so that the data would become available relatively quickly. And the trial would be run, you know, in multiple sites in multiple countries. So, but I do hope to be able to present it to you at the next, you know, in the within the next 90 days.
Sure, no problem. Second question was, you had mentioned that the majority of the revenue to date is capital sales derived. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing as the barriers to actual usage and how things have changed over the last couple of quarters? Is it strictly a reimbursement issue, or are you seeing any specific procedural issues or issues with hospital administration?
Sure. So the So let me share with you the experience of a couple of sites that are that have had it for perhaps about 9 months. I think, as you can imagine, you know, we got off to a pretty good start, and the learning curve during the first 10 to 20 patients was, you know, was there, and then what they began to become comfortable with it. During that time, we also learned that the patient population is generally happy with this, with the experience that they get through. So the primary driver of utilization at the moment is really the patient word of mouth, the surgeon's excitement of doing the procedure. And so I expect that patient pull, or driving it towards more awareness in the community, is likely to be a good driver for this product. That is what we're seeing first and foremost. Second, I think you're right. The current patient population today is primarily customer pay. And reimbursement is certainly one of the main, I guess I should say, stumbling block or the main issue in driving mass adoption. Now, having said that, Germany is reimbursing for ablation. It is not a very high reimbursement at the moment. It's about 4,000 euros. But we will be applying for the reimbursement for the use of the MRI. And I think if we get there, then I think that door will also open up for you. But at the moment, I think the most compelling driver is really the patient experience.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. Thirdly, Philips and other radiation therapy players appear to be making fairly optimistic comments in support of MR-Linac technology and suggesting that it could potentially be a game changer in the future. How are you viewing this as this competitive technology? And I guess more importantly, do you have comfort that Philips will avoid promoting it for prostate cancer to protect the TULSA-PRO franchise?
Yes. So I am delighted with the Linac technology. I think that the more technologies that come out where an MR is being used in real time, the better off everyone who is developing therapies for where a real-time MR is used is going to work. I anticipate that the market will be segmenting as we go forward. So the point being that radiation as an energy source is good for certain kinds of therapies, and ultrasound as an energy source for ablation is good for certain other kinds of therapies. So in general, we have the ability to ablate larger volumes, so bigger tumors, solid organ tumors, I think will gravitate more towards ultrasound and highly dynamic work, blood flow types of tumors, and smaller ones are likely to gravitate more towards other types of treatments, which is, would be radiation or maybe even lasers and so on. So that's kind of general. Now, with our situation, I'm very confident about our therapy because we are the only ones that actually use a catheter. So we're going to be able to go inside the prostate, right in the middle of the prostate. If there is any patient motion during the procedure, because of the skewing, that because our prostate, our tube is right in the middle, it moves along with the prostate. So this adjustment and so on, all those issues are very, very limited in our situation. And because we don't have to go through all of these other vital organs, which radiation would have to go through regardless, or any other treatment would have to go through regardless, we do not pose a threat to the rectum. We do not pose much of a threat to the nerve bundles. And so that the fact that we are inside out is a very big driver for why our therapy is kind of getting the kind of feedback that we're getting. And my final point is that in urology in particular, you know, we are starting to see that there is a workflow that is being developed. And this workflow is what we're calling our horizontal workflow, where a patient is now more and more being diagnosed using an MR. Multiparametric MR is growing, and more and more, most of the biopsies in the United States now use MR as a guiding tool. And so basically, urologists are becoming far more comfortable with using MR to help diagnose, using MR to do the biopsy, and moving to using MR for treatment is a very natural step for them, and then using MR to do follow-ups. So we think this whole continuum from beginning to end will be the other important driver. So for prostate, I think that ultrasound or the way we do the treatment is likely to be the better option.
Thank you, Arun. And lastly, can you update us on the Siemens relationship? Where are you in terms of technology integration process and sort of the timeline to when they would be ready to sell TULSA-PRO?
Sure. I'm happy to. So we are discussing, we are in discussions. What I can tell you is that as of 1st of April, we will be part of the Siemens catalog. So it is a step, positive step. We are negotiating more things. We will announce them with all, when all of those are complete. But yes, the one key milestone that we have achieved is that as of 1st of April, we will be part of the catalog. I don't expect that in, right away the revenues will jump from them, because we are going to start training their sales team, and we are initiating that process already. But it does bode well for the longer term for us. So we are already part of the Philips catalog as of 1st of January, and then 1st of April we're part of the Siemens catalog.
Great. Thanks very much, Arun.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Rahul Serugasar, Paradigm Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Arun and Matthew, congratulations on a great 2017. I guess my first question really is just quickly, tactically, sorry, forgive the pun. When are you looking at interim data for the TAC trial?
Sure. So, Rahul, the next one that we would be announcing, as I mentioned in the prepared call, is at the American Urological Conference. That will be coming up in May. As I mentioned, it is on track to be announced on the 21st of May at 8:20 a.m.
Great, thank you. And then my second question is really coming back to your comments about being a platform company, and that's really great to see the evolution of Profound becoming a platform company this year. So with the recent capital raise, my math says you have about, you know, $43 million in cash, and based on your burn of around, you know, 19 a year and a year and a half to get to market on the TULSA-PRO, you know, it's about $15 million delta there. And are you looking at that $15 million primarily for commercialization activities, or do you see it, you know, potentially to grow your platform?
So, Rahul, I'm actually quite excited about what we have at the moment. And I think that the priorities for us right now are to really continue to focus on the TULSA-PRO, number one, and continue to strengthen, number one, our clinical data. So, as I mentioned in the prepared remarks, we will continue to add to additional clinical trials or studies that will improve our ability to get reimbursement and collect more data for further adoption, including BPH. The second priority is that we will continue to increase our sales team in Europe. Now that we do have a few sites that are running and doing well, we think it's time, and with the finances that we've raised, we think it's time to increase the size of our sales team, which will hopefully result in increased revenue over time for us. Those are, on the Tulsa side, are our top priorities. On the Sonaleaf side, I think the other priority on the Tulsa side relates to continuing to be available on every kind of MR that is either the install base or any new MRs that the MR companies are developing. So we will continue to be in dialogue with MR companies to make sure that our product is available on every platform that makes sense to perform on. And I think, as I mentioned before, we will continue to upgrade our product as we go to make it easier to use and reduce the surgical time. On the Sonaleaf side, I just want to be very disciplined about it, and we think that there is an interesting, very, very interesting opportunity. And we have, you know, submitted a lot of documents to the FDA already. And I think once the FDA sort of helps us chart the regulatory pathway, I think after that we will, you know, start to present the commercial pathway as well. But in the meantime, as soon as we get the approval for Sonaleaf in China, I do think we will work with, Philips already. We already have an agreement, and we will work with them right away to begin to build the revenue line. So I think with that, I think that's sort of the priority at the moment for us. And I think the financial the strength that we have now will allow us to really execute to all of that. Anything beyond that, I don't think is something that we're contemplating in the short term.
Great, thank you. And then my final question, most of them you answered really around the BPH, but just one final question around the BPH. It's great to hear that you're working on the protocols. So what does the preliminary data look like that you used for those protocols?
So the preliminary data, basically, we've had sites who are conducting these patients, and it's been quite revealing, actually, because of the fact that we are, inside the prostate. Our surgeons are basically able to ablate in layman's term, I kind of call it the upper half of the prostate in the relevant zone. And that allows us to be very confident that the, ejaculatory ducts that are in the lower half of the prostate are safe, that the nerve bundles that are below the prostate are safe, that we're really away from the rectum. Certainly the urinary pathway is safe because of water. So the likelihood of side effects is even lower, of having any problems, are much lower. The effect, what we are doing is a very controlled ablation. So we're treating between 57 to 80 degrees. So we're not charring the cells. And because we're not charring the cells, the response from the natural response from the body, this is kind of our theory, is that, it's able to absorb the tissue slowly. And as it absorbs the tissue, the pathways can become, back to their original sizes. So that's kind of what we see at the moment. And around this is what we're planning to write the protocols, or that's where the protocols are written.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much. That's all my questions for now.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Brian Gagnon, Gagnon Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Arun, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Brian. Thank you.
All right. So on Sonaleaf, Chinese approval, you think in Q2. Which procedures do you think you'll be going after to start with?
Sure. Brian, as I look at the different procedures for China, we think fibroids is the best place to start. And the rationale there is that we think that this product is best suited for fibroids. It's a very well-designed product, actually, for fibroids. There's some patented technology in this product that allows us to treat the fibroids in somewhere between 2 to 3 hours, which we believe is significantly less than other types of treatments. And we believe that there is a relatively younger population in China that would much rather have a incision-free treatment like this than remove the whole uterus, which is basically, you know, this allows, our treatment allows us to have them, you know, have the ability to have, you know, childbirth. So that's what we will start with. That's what the clinical data that we collected, that's what we've submitted with the Chinese FDA.
And what do you think you'll charge for the product over there?
Yeah, good question. So at the moment, it's more of a capital sale product. And so we are, you know, doing some market research, review our numbers. So I'm not prepared to give you a specific number at the moment. But I think that given that the volume in China tend to be high, I'm not expecting that there would be any, you know, issue with pricing or profitability or margins at the moment.
Okay. And what do you see as the final stumbling block to getting approval?
I think that the expectation we had was that we would get approval by year end last year. Since that time, they did ask some more technical questions, which we have addressed to their complete satisfaction. So at this point, we think it's primarily related to administrative paperwork. That's the stage we're at this point.
Okay. Two additional questions, if you would.
Sure.
When you start to compare your results on the TAC trial, are you going to compare them to radiation therapy and or prostatectomy?
Yeah. I think, Brian, that since, you know, the trial is complete and we did use a number of intermediate patients, and since those patients normally would go to either radiation or prostatectomy, I think it would be very interesting to, you know, have this comparison and maybe look at propensity-matched patient population and do a comparison, because I think that is the benchmark. That's what people undergo today. As compared to active surveillance, where if you're using early-stage patients, you would use that as a benchmark. So, yeah, I think we are certainly going to talk to our physicians, surgeons, and see what's the best way to make that comparison.
Excellent. And lastly, your go-to-market strategy in the U.S., what are you thinking about?
So we have, we have an agreement with Philips already. We do anticipate with the Siemens agreement that now that we're in catalog, we will anticipate that they will also be working with us on this. So I think that at the moment, we think that the best way to sell the upfront capital is by working through our partners. And so it's much easier for them to bundle. You know, as I mentioned before, there's this horizontal strategy that is being developed where you can look at MR from diagnosis to biopsy and treatment and follow-up. So I think that there is a lot more attention being paid by MR companies towards urology. And so if that happens, I think it becomes a natural solution for them to add our treatment to the portfolio of a large capital sale. I think from the perspective of utilization, what we are seeing is that with our experience in Europe, you know, that is much better handled by our own people. So we have, you know, one person at the moment who is supporting the install base, and she is able to build a relationship. She's able to help them get trained. She's able to help them pick the right patient population, segment properly, and so on. And I think that side of it, where it's much more clinical messaging, much more procedure-based, making sure that it's part of the protocol of the hospital to have this as an integral part of the treatment regimen, it's part of the scheduling and so on, I think that is much better handled by us. And the thing that I really like about that idea is that it allows us to incrementally build our sales team rather than having to hire a lot of people in one shot, which is, can be very expensive. This will become much more of an incremental model. So that's where we are, our head is at the moment.
You made a comment earlier about wanting to work with all the MR companies. Should that lead us to believe that all of the MR companies in the U.S. will be giving their technology to you to be able to use in the future?
So I think that that is the idea, that it's not just Profound, but, you know, there are a number of companies that are developing interventional procedures that are based upon use of real-time MR, and I think it's in the best interest of MR companies to allow us to connect with them, which will ultimately increase the utilization of MR devices. So I'm not in a position to sort of present to you exactly what our plan is or when we would get there, but I do anticipate that over time we will work with all the MR companies.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
As a reminder, we are now conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our next question comes from David Kadekel, Beacon Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you, and congratulations, Arun, and the entire Profound Medical team for a really solid finish to 2017. Wishing Rashid Dewan a very speedy recovery as well. I had a very quick question around BPH in particular, and how you see eventually if and when this this procedure will be approved in the United States. Do you see this as justifying a reason for additional institutions that aren't already purchasing the Tulsa Pro to purchase the Tulsa Pro specifically for BPH, or do you see this as more adding to your recurring revenue model as opposed to the capital cost of it?
Sure, David, that's a great question, and thank you for the sentiments related to Rashid. So with respect to BPH, in Europe, our product is approved as an ablation device with CE mark, and on that basis, since that is what we're doing partial ablation of the upper part of the prostate. It is our estimation that we do not need any additional approval. Based upon what we know today, and we anticipate that we will, in the 510K application, include whatever data we need to include, so that when we do receive the 510K, we would anticipate that we will not need to do a separate approval or clearance process for it. I think the main thing for us on the BPH is that we're not looking to compete with in the small to medium prostate space. We're looking to be a specialized procedure in the large prostate space because we think that is where the real unmet need is. And so we see this as an add-on that simply adds to the flexibility of what our technology can do. And, you know, we'll see as the more data comes about, we'll see how, you know, how big this can be, and we'll certainly, you know, discuss it more in the analyst calls in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of the question and answer session, and I would like to turn the call back to Arun Menawat for closing remarks.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the great questions as well. And we're really looking forward to 2018 and keeping you up to date as we go quarter over quarter. Thank you.